Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and it is July the 24th, 2014. So today we're going to be talking about coaching athletes through injury and how you can – I was going to use myself as an example since I'm an injured athlete right at the moment. That would be a good topic that you could, you know, use me as a sort of case study, one case study anyway. But I know all of you probably have situations, too, where maybe you've been injured as an athlete yourself or you've had other athletes who are injured. And so there's the physical side of recovery, and then, of course, there's the mental, emotional side of recovery, too, which is so important, and they all sort of work together. So I wanted to address that. And, of course, the main reason for these calls is to answer your questions and to be able to bring in, you know, have your comments and any success stories that you have, any progress that you're making, to share those things. So you're welcome to do that. And it's always good to, you know, if you have questions, too, to email them to me ahead of time, and then I'll make sure that I always answer them on the call. You could ask them to me live on the call as well. And then if you're not able to make the call for some reason, I'll always answer your questions anyway during the call, and then it'll be on the replay. So, yeah, so I know we have a few new people. Let's see, did someone just join us? The last person that just joined us, who was that?
Hi, Joanne, it's Amy.
Oh, hi, Amy, how are you?
I'm doing well, how are you?
Good, good. I know you've always got great success stories. Let's see, we've got a couple of new people, so I wanted to have you introduce yourselves. Let's see, David McIntyre, do you want to introduce yourself? And what, you know, where you're practicing and why you wanted to take the course?
Sure. Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Dave McIntyre. I'm a clinical psychologist. I'm currently serving in the United States Public Health Service and reside in Phoenix, Arizona. I've been doing off and a little bit to work on working with athletes in different forms, but when I heard about Dr. Program, I was interested in just learning more on the foundation and getting a good base so I can kind of move forward. So I'm really excited about this program and looking forward to learning from everybody here.
Great. Thanks for thanks for joining us, David. And then someone else new just joined us, I think. Who just joined us?
Hi, it's Michelle, Dr. Joanne. How are you doing?
Hi, good. Yeah, from Canada, or you're in the east part of Canada now, is that right?
Yeah.
Ottawa or?
I'm in Ontario. Sorry,
Ontario. Yeah.
I'm a bit late.
You're all over the place.
I'm all over the place.
Yeah, right. I know you were in Bali in Indonesia for many months, right?
Yeah, 2 years.
Yeah, surfing
Long
in
enough.
Bali. And now in Ottawa, Ontario, and then you're going to be coming to Vancouver?
Yeah, back for good in September.
Yeah, great.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, thanks for joining us. And then we have another new, relatively new person, Brian Swanson, who's on the call, too. Hi, Brian.
Hi, how are you doing?
Okay, good. Yeah, do you want to introduce yourself? And I think, you know, just briefly, you have an amazing injury and recovery story, your stadium story. If you could share that with us, I think that would be really inspirational to everyone.
Yeah, my name is Brian Swanson. I live in Portland, Oregon. In 2002, I was attending a Mariners and Yankees baseball game in Seattle, and I fell 25 feet out of the stadium. It left me in a coma. I had a lot of injuries from my broken wrist and all kinds of things. And the doctors, you know, they had to give me a massive ventral hernia, so my abdominals are really, you know, kind of still hashed up pretty good. I wasn't given a very good prognosis to have much of, pain-free life without pills and stuff. And I found a place after slipping a disc in my back, and they recovered me. And I've just been rehabbing and bringing my body into better posture alignment. And so I've noticed through all this that how much visualization and the mental part of it, it plays a part of you getting better and stuff. And I kind of used to do it in a kind of a crude way. And Now I'm just learning how to be more effective with that so I can utilize that in my practice that I'm beginning to start up with my healing practice. And I'm just excited to be here. And I'm thanks for this opportunity, Dr. Del Cotter. I appreciate it.
Oh, sure. Thanks. Yeah, I think that thanks for sharing your story, Brian. Yeah, amazing. Mm-hmm. Falling out of a stadium 25 feet and living is just an amazing story in itself. Mm-hmm. And could I just ask you, was there a point where you felt really low and wondered, got down on yourself and had to make a turnaround mentally?
Yeah, it was. In 2008, when I hurt my back, I was really unable to do much. I was left pretty much on a couch. The surgery I had didn't really help much, and I just was really down. And I believed what the doctor said, that I always have a bad back because of all my abdominal injuries. And so I ended up losing my job because of that. And what really inspired me to do better is I looked at myself in the mirror one day at 330 pounds. I said, I have a daughter on the way, and this is not an example that I want to be for her. And so I started to change, and I made some goals and did some affirmations. And lo and behold, I got a Groupon for this great place that pretty much saved my life. And, it just kind of goes from there. I can go into a really long story, but I know I did a lot of visualization, what I see, what I wanted to be, and that helped me keep going on and pushing through the tough times that I had to go through to get where I am now.
Yeah, that's great when you can have a purpose of some sort,
mm-hmm.
you know, like your daughter coming, mm-hmm. that you had to sort of had to get better to be there for someone else. It's mm-hmm. Sometimes it can be, so congratulations, Brian. And,
yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and you with experiences like that, you can really be an example for your clients, and I mm-hmm. encourage you. I think it's good. Stories are great. It's good to be able to tell those stories with your mm-hmm. athletes because they realize if you could make it through that, they could too. So, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's great. It's helped a lot with my credibility when people said I don't have like a doctor's degree or something, and I try to explain to them what's happening, why a joint's hurting, and I explain what happened to myself and how you can reverse that. And it brings a lot of credibility when people, you know, hear my story and then when I talk to them about that. So yeah.
Yeah, it's one thing to be a sports psychology expert that's just kind of an academic that's talking about what to do, but if you've got an experience of some sort, either yourself or you can share experiences of other clients, you know, without mm-hmm. revealing their names, then it really brings it home to clients so that they can do this.
Mm-hmm.
So, I know there's a couple of people that had questions, Michelle and Alex, and why don't we, I'll get to those in just a moment, but I just wanted to share with we're talking about injury, just kind of use myself as an example because I'm on crutches right now, actually. And so I thought that this might be a good chance to, kind of use this as a case study of how you would coach, me or someone like me to get, both the mental, emotional, and physical side. I have some ideas myself, and I have a kind of a plan here that I wanted to share with you, but first I wanted to get your ideas. So what happened with my story was that I'm a top athlete, as you know, probably from my background. I was winner of the San Francisco Marathon, and I was second in the Hawaii Ironman Triathlon several years ago, and then I've continued to compete on a world-class level in my age group and with running. And just 5 weeks ago, I was running at my top level, and we have a local Pacific Association road racing series here in the San Francisco Bay Area. So I was, performing in the top of my age group and won the 5K race, and I was second in the 10K race. And there was a one-mile race coming up, which is very, for a distance runner, it's really hard to run a one-mile race. because it's just a totally different animal. You've got to really do a lot of fast intervals, and it was a different kind of training than I was used to. And so what happened was I 5 weeks ago I injured my right hamstring, strained it, and took a little bit of time off running and then got back into it. Slowly was starting to run again, but I was obviously doing a lot of compensating on the left side. And then, sure enough, 2 weeks ago when I was running, I injured my left foot. And so this is something that often happens with athletes. You'll find, you know, is that there's something, you know, one thing goes wrong, and then it kind of gets the athlete out of balance, gets your body out of balance, so something else gets injured, and it's kind of a teeter-tottering thing. And so what can happen is, you know, that your emotions, your mood goes, you know, can really get thrown off as well, because your normal plan is thrown off of training. And you find that's where athletes, you know, that's where we get so much of our, I know all of you are athletes, or doing, you know, working on your fitness at some level, and that's where we get our, you know, so many of our needs met, mood elevation and staying fit and all of that through training. And when all of a sudden you can't train, it's really difficult. So I, the left foot then was, we thought maybe it was a stress fracture, but, and so I was really concerned, but we ruled out it's not a stress fracture, it's not plantar fasciitis, it's not a neuroma, it's not any of the normal foot injuries. It's just from what the doctors and the chiropractor can figure out, it's the bones from an earlier surgery I had, bunion surgery many years ago. There's scar tissue in there, and as you get older, the bones aren't moving correctly, and so the joints aren't moving as fluently, so the ligaments and tendons get strained. And so this is the best thing. So they did an adjustment with my bones, the metatarsals, which are the bones that go out to your toes. The second one was rotated, so they rotated that back. And so the treatment is, for now, is to stay off of it, be on crutches, take the weight totally off, be on crutches, and in a walking cast. So that's like a, you know, just a, not a solid cast, but it looks like a ski boot, and it's rounded on the bottom, so it totally immobilizes your foot, but you can still walk, put a little bit of weight on it. So I've been just doing that, and now I'll gradually, you know, transition off of the crutches and on to, you know, back into running. Hopefully it's a short-term thing, but, you know, your mind plays games with you, tricks with you, and all those thoughts come in about, you know, oh, what if this doesn't get better? What if I, you know, start to walk on it, and it, you know, my doctor says in about 3 days, test it, try to walk normally, because it hurts just to push off on my left foot. And so there's, you know, I haven't been able to run, of course, because it hurts just to walk. And so that, you know, there's that little fear that comes in, that says, I'm afraid that even if I test it and it's still the same, you know, it's like if you're not making progress, then your mind says, you know, oh, we're going to, it's never going to get better. Or am I going to, if it does get better, am I going to, you know, I have to be so careful. What if I re-injure it or go, you know, go back? Because athletes often do that, is, you know, come back to the same, you know, come back too soon and then re-injure the same spot. And then you ask yourself, well, what, how do I keep myself from going crazy and stay motivated to continue? You know, I'm swimming and doing floor exercises, and gradually can get work back to hopefully biking and then walking and then running. But it's a, you know, it can be a long process. So I just wanted to ask all of you, you know, as a, if you were coaching me or an athlete, you know, like me with this kind of issue, you know, what you would say or what you would do to get through the, you know, well, the whole thing, the mental part, the emotional part, the physical part, and to, you know, keep, you know, with your client, going downhill emotionally, and sink into that sort of athlete depression that we that you can get sometimes. So let me just open it up and see if you got anybody got any ideas what you would do. It's a great I thought it's a great chance for you to for us to role play here.
Yeah, I'll start out.
Is this Brian?
Yeah, it is Brian. Sorry, I should announce myself. I forget we're not in a room here together.
You're right. Great.
So what I would focus on is I would kind of, you know, relax the individual. I'd get you relaxed, get you to focus on, I'd probably have you visualize somebody running with proper mechanics.
Uh-huh.
I'd get you to visualize that. And so you could repeat that in your mind, because that would also stimulate your nervous system to help it. When you did heal, you would be able to, you'd have that vision in your mind of running properly, because I feel like that's a lot what's going on with you right now, mm-hmm. is the mechanics aren't operating functionally.
Yeah.
And I'd have you visualize that, and that I'd also try to help you understand, bring you more in touch with your body, really listen to it, so you didn't go out and push yourself too hard to where you re-injured yourself, setting yourself back. And I'd also help you set up to let you know that, you are going to have times where you feel worse. That's part of getting better. It's just the nature of the beast. Those are things I'd have you you focus on.
Yeah, that's great, Brian. Thank you.
Welcome.
And that's good, because that's one of the issues. You hit one of the nail on the head with one thing, is that I've been limping and favoring, the left foot for the last 2 weeks. Before they said to take the weight off of it, every time when I would walk, I'm, walking with this limp and not putting that much weight on the left foot. So I'm used to now. My brain is saying, that I'm walking in this strange way. And so I need to be able to somehow visualize coming back to walking gracefully again and walking in a balanced way when my feet are ready for that, right?
Right.
Yeah, and like you said, with proper mechanics. Yeah, other people, thank you, Brian. Great. Other people that have suggestions?
Dr. Joanne, it's Michelle.
Yeah, hi, Michelle.
Hi, my computer cut out, and I didn't hear, what was the actual injury to the foot? Was it from the bunion surgery, or was it from compromising it because of the hamstring injury?
Probably both. Compensating because of my right hamstring, but the main, which is obvious that probably happened because that was the right hamstring, and now this is the left foot. And so that happens a lot with athletes. So, but the long-term maybe cause is that I had the bunion surgery about over 10 years ago, and there's scar tissue, where they did a cut in the first bone, the first toe and the second toe. And so they're saying that the second toe, that's right where it's, the pain is below that on the bottom of the foot. So they're saying that left second metatarsal, the second bone there, is not moving properly. So they're trying, the chiropractor is adjusting the bones there and trying to get the bones moving better, and then the ligaments and tendons are all strained there, so they have to kind of heal up too. They're inflamed, so I'm doing a lot of icing.
Mm-hmm.
So, did you have suggestions, or what are your thoughts?
Oh, well, as a homeopath, I would give you some remedies for the ligaments. But in terms of visualization, I would just, like what we had talked about a few months ago, about just visualizing, fresh blood coming into the area and taking away any waste products and just bathing the area and just a lot of healing energy. And then you can use your power words, just look at how you're talking to yourself and see if there's any negative self-talk going on. And for every negative statement, make two or three positive ones that we could replace that with, and including affirmations of getting better and setting some goals into the future of races you want to do but far enough into the future that gives you some hope. And not getting back into it too quickly, because you can delay the healing process. And I've torn my hamstring before, and one thing that's really helped me is foundation training, which originated in your neck of the woods. And I just think it's a bomb. It's all posterior lengthening of the muscles. So it's really good for your glutes, your hamstrings, and your back.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's called foundation. And I think it's something that everybody needs to incorporate into their fitness and workout routine, especially if you're a high-level athlete.
Yeah, that's great. So everyone knows, is there any, you said with homeopath remedies for ligaments, is there anything you'd recommend that's available in a health food store, let's say?
Yeah, well, I would be taking Arnica 200 daily.
Oh, yeah, I rub Arnica on there. Is that what you mean?
I would take the pills.
Okay.
Rubbing Arnica is great, but I would also take the pills.
Michelle, would you do both, or why do you favor the pill over the cream?
Well, because it gets in deeper.
Oh, it does. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
great.
And the remedies actually work on an energetic principle, whereas the cream is physical. So it's very limited to where you put it. And then the Arnica can then get into the hamstring and all sorts of other places. But I would take that twice a day.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll go to the health food store today.
The 200.
Arnica 200, meaning 200 milligrams?
That's a potency, not 30 or, yeah, that's too low. I would do 200. And they might have to special order that for you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's great that you have that area of expertise, too. Yeah, okay, great. Thanks, Michelle. Yeah, a lot of great suggestions there. So, visualizing fresh blood, moving into, just so everyone can hear, removing waste products, healing energy, and, power words, being aware of any negative self-talk that's going on. Someone said, this is a great suggestion from my chiropractor. He said, visualize, like you've got the big yourself, like I've got the big Dr. Joanne in the brain here, and in that part that's injured, the foot, visualize little Dr. Joanne's in the foot, kind of saying, hey, kind of having that conversation, here's what we need. So wherever the injured spot is, it's like there's another little voice in there, yourself. Take the name, if you're working with somebody named Bill, say there's little Bills inside that foot saying, hey, stay off of me if it needs resting or, I need icing. So you have being able to have that conversation with your body is a good thing to, like you said, Brian, to stay in touch. Yeah. Great. Yeah. Other people have suggestions too?
Hi, Joanne.
Okay. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
It was Amy. I was going to say something.
Okay.
I was going to say I would go back in time to when you were injured before and you started training for the triathlon and you discovered that you were a biker and a swimmer and you had so much success really because of that previous injury that if you kind of go back into that mentality of look what happened to me last time I was injured, but I turned it around and made something really amazing happen for myself. So kind of to focus on that and also think what are the things that you may be able to do now aside from running that could kind of create the same type of scenario for yourself.
Yeah, that's great. Like I still can do biking. I just have to be careful of it, not to get out of the saddle because that's constrained the ligaments a little bit, but just stay in the saddle. And I can do swimming. And one of the things I can do, and this is a good suggestion. Yeah, thanks, Amy. One of the suggestions that I could do and a lot of athletes can do if they're rehabbing is it's good for any rehab of the legs is to get into a pool and start, stand at a spot where you're just can barely touch the ground and then walk up into the more shallow end slowly. And so you gradually put a little bit. So you're basically, the water is supporting you, so it's much easier to walk. But then you can gradually walk up to where it's more shallow, so your foot or your legs having to do more work. I did that. You know, I had a bicycle accident 3 years ago, and I broke my left hip. And I need to, like you said, Amy, go back in time when I was injured before the San Francisco Marathon to Ironman is one. Example, but also 3 years ago, more recently, when I broke my hip, I had a 100% recovery. It was just fantastic. It was a huge injury, and I was on crutches for 6 weeks. But I kept positive and kept doing, and I did that pool exercise I'm just talking about when I was ready to walk, and walked from the you know, 5 foot end of the pool up to 4 feet. Gradually putting more weight on my hip until my hip was saying, hey, this is too much, and then you go back down in the pool. And that's a great way to kind of, it's like water therapy and allowing the water to support you while you can't do complete walking yourself. So that's a good exercise. And that's great, Amy. Fantastic to go back to a time when you were injured before and had a success recovery, and then say, turn that into power, yet words too. Like say, if I can get through that hip, breaking my hip, and I got back to actually running even faster, much faster than I did before the hip injury. So it was, and plus I learned so much and developed a whole injury checklist, which I'll share with you. Injury recovery checklist of things to do, then that can be really, really useful. And it can really, to remember that, yeah, this, even though it might seem slow right now, success does happen, and I've had much worse things happen here. So that's great. Thanks, Amy. Yeah, good.
The other thing you could do is you can find a bunch of other people on crutches and race them.
Yeah, I love it. That's great. Well, actually, that's along with that suggestion is finding other people who are injured and recovering is fantastic therapies. Like I, you know, went to the gym, and I just, you know, I was on crutches, and this other lady just said, "Oh my gosh, yeah, I just recovering from a ski accident." I, you know, she said 4 months ago I was in a ski accident. I totally dislocated my knee. She pointed, my knee was way up here, and she pointed about several inches from where her kneecap is supposed to be. Oh my gosh, and her kneecap was totally dislocated, and they carried her down the hill, and was on crutches for, maybe 3 months. And so now 4 months later, she was excited. She was finally doing her first walk run, you know, walking a little bit, running a little bit that day. So that kind of thing really encouraged me that, oh my gosh, she had to be off for 4 months, and now here she is back running again. When you can find other people go to a gym where you're bound to run into other people that have their stories as well, recovery stories. Even if it's not the same injury as yours, it's just exciting to hear that that kind of thing, because everyone's been in that same mental space of thinking, you know, being down in the dumps. And I've coached other athletes before, Meb Keflezighi, you know, who was the winner of the New York City Marathon most recently. I worked with him, and you know, he had a hip injury where he was just having to crawl to the bathroom. You know, he couldn't even walk at all, and he just basically was crawling on the floor, and then was able to rise to the point of he got silver medalist in the previous Olympics, and now winner of the New York City Marathon. So those kinds of stories can really help us to believe. I think that's the key factor here, is that belief that you can get better. So that's great. Thanks, Amy. Yeah, other people have suggestions or ideas?
Hi, Dave McIntyre here. I just, I'm always interested in everything that you all said is excellent, and I think just being aware to the person spots, and like somebody mentioned earlier, just if they've had any negative thoughts or patterns of negative automatic negative thinking that people go to when they're injured and they see their teammates playing or something, just trying to you know, make sure they're aware of that this stuff is happening and they're prepared when it does happen, how to counter it with those reassuring thoughts. And so I think that's something that people don't always pay attention to, but it's something we all easily fall into.
Yeah, that's great. I know, David, you work with the military, right, as a psychologist, and have probably had lots of military people that are really that have been injured.
Yeah, you know, and it's especially when there's some with some of the squabble. A lot of the guys are and women are committed to their platoon or their team, and when they're injured, they're just wanting to get back into the game, their game, and just having to make sure that they're doing their recovery and doing what they need to do and not going back too soon, because, you know, if somebody goes too soon and they're really not fit to perform, then they can put others at risk, you know. So that's one thing that we want to make sure that they're fit and ready to go, but not only with their physical side, but their mental side, that they're geared up and ready to get back into the fight.
Yeah, right. Because if they're, especially with military, if they're going back into, if for some reason, a war situation, it's like you know, there's no like easy warm up. You could just be out there in a combat situation, having to be, you know, perform at 100% right away, depending on what the situation is. So
Ryan.
That's great, David. Thank you. Yeah, yeah. This, and so there's always that voice inside that, like you said, the patterns of negative thinking and being aware of that. So I think it's helpful to say, have those kind of power words, I call them, or affirmations or positive self-statements ready to go. I actually write them on my computer. And there's, you know, in my book, in your Performing Edge course, there's a whole chapter on that, listening to the wisdom of your body, and chapter on injury, and talking about being able to, you know, create your own set of power words that are positive thinking that are, but if you can create them specifically for your own situation, like with me, you know, being able to walk evenly, and I am walking evenly, I'm walking gracefully, I'm walking. It's better, you know, some people want to say, I'm walking without pain, but even using the word pain is, when you use that word, then the right brain takes that in and still, you know, reinforces the word pain. So it's better to, I think, use an opposite word to say, I'm walking easily and gracefully and fluidly, and not use that word pain continuously, so that you don't reinforce that in your mind. So that's good too. Yeah, thank you, David. That's great. Did other people join us too? I heard a couple of dings, new people.
I think Dr. Joanne, I am.
Oh, hi, Alex.
Hi. I like the idea of visualization and imagery. You clearly explain it very well in your book, and you're very good at this. And clearly, the benefits of staying with the energy and trying to send a positive energy to the place where healing needs to be taking place is extremely powerful. So there's a lot of blood vessels running around, and there's some structure of muscles, and that needs to be realigned to some extent. And clearly, just to have the image of the proper healing that has a powerful, very, very powerful effect on this process. One thing to have in mind is that each muscle, each bone, each organ, each part of our internal bodies is wrapped around by this special tissue called the fascia. The fascia is like a saran wrap, to explain it in very simple terms, that wraps around each one of our organs, muscles, tissues, and joints, and continuously from head to toes, from one end of one left arm to the left, continuously. That doesn't stop. which means that when we get injured, it's not just that the bone may be misplaced or the tissue itself, but also the fascia may get broken. And this fascia, what basically allows, does is maintains the muscles or the organs in one same place. So to pay attention to not just in the imagery process, to have the muscles in the right place, to have the blood circulation properly throughout the bones and throughout the muscles, and that the bones align perfectly, but also go one step further, which is imagine the surround wrap being wrapping beautifully around the injured area, and that's basically the fascia. And the more we pay attention to that, that allows for the healing to be more complete. One of the ways that I do this is by do what we call touch therapy. I mean, I did a certification of part of my, as a psychologist, to provide touch healing. So, which basically what it does is, it's like when we throw a pebble on the pond, we see the water having these ripple effects and the water spreads out, right? So the same thing happens if I were to make contact with my palm or my arms, let's say on the shoulder of an athlete. The contact itself allows for that athlete, for that body, to receive that energy and begins to be spread out throughout the body. It's extremely powerful. It's like the same effect that we get from, let's say, if we have a friend of ours and we receive a hug, that contact becomes very powerful because it's a contact from skin to skin, basically. So the same thing happens with injury. If I were to place my hand where the injury takes place, the energy of my hand, not that I'm sending energy, but the contact itself is perceived from the injured place as a healing process, and that allows for the healing to move much faster. So the idea is to make contact in the injury and just have the intention of just allow the fascia and the bones and the muscles to be realigned in the right place.
Yeah.
So that's something that I do with athletes and people that come to me for different type of injuries. And that's extremely powerful because they're really addressing the nonverbal, physiological part of who we are as humans, which is so basic. I mean, this is exactly what babies get when they're born. They are being held by the parent, by the mother and the father. And that's exactly the type of communication the baby receives, which is extremely healing. So, unfortunately, as we grow older, we push aside a little bit the touch itself, or the hug, for some reason, actually that's the most powerful healing process there is. So, I did a certification of this for 3 years, and I'm trained by doing this, and each time I offer this type of work with clients, I absolutely ask for permission every single time, because I'm not a physical therapist, I'm psychotherapy. But I do ask for permission, I do explain what I do, and what this may do, or the benefits, and if they go for it, then I begin to do this type of work, which is extremely powerful. So anyway, so in your case, what you may do is just place a hand, maybe your right or left hand, whatever you may be more, if you're a righty, you might use the right hand, and just place it where the injury takes place. That's it.
Yeah.
No with intention of sending energy. You're not there to send some magic energy, let's heal, get better. That's not the intention. The intention is just to be there. Just allow the healing hand of yours just to make contact where the injury is. And just allow it there. And you may notice that if you stay there long enough, your breathing will change. You will take deeper breaths. So that's a process that the body internally is going through into this healing.
So
I can't do this over the phone. It's kind of difficult, but at least it gives you some idea what this is.
I'm doing that right now as you're speaking, putting my hand on the bottom of my foot, and it's great. And I do that every night before I go to bed.
Perfect.
You know, as I'm visualizing, I put my hand on the foot.
Great. Yes.
But I think, yeah, there's more to it than that, as you say. Just if you combine the touch therapy, like with, as you say, visualization. And
yeah, exactly. That's a very, very powerful. Yeah.
And sending, you know, I think of it as like whatever, imagine a golden ball of healing energy going, you know, from my hand to the foot and then throughout the body.
Yeah,
so that's great. That's a really important
So you may place one hand on your toe or the toe where it got injured, and maybe the second hand on your belly, for example, because the belly area gathers a lot of the anxiety. There's a lot of nerves in there around the belly area, the stomach.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. So kind of a and it's kind of like your center of energy, would
That's
you say,
right.
or in the belly.
A lot of nerve endings in the stomach area. Yeah.
Yeah. Great. So thank you, Alex.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
So, you may want to look it up. Look it up at fascia, F like in Frank, A S. CIA, so I give a better idea of what it is.
Yeah, it's throughout the body, and I've had plantar fasciitis before on the bottom of my foot.
Right.
Yeah, I'm aware of that, and that's part of the issue too, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
So great. Yeah. Was there other people? Let's see. Greg, are you on the call too?
I am. Yes, I am on the call. Thank you.
Oh yeah, thanks. But, yeah, I just wanted to include everyone and see if you did you have any ideas about the foot and the healing and what you would do.
Based on experience that I've had, and in fact, you kind of walked me through this a few weeks ago with my shoulder. What I recognized, and I think what you're experiencing as well on the psychological side, is we put so much emphasis on what we do, our skills and our experience, you know, helps to develop what our self-image is. So what I think you're experiencing psychologically or emotionally is potentially your loss of who you are. Because if you're not able to continue to compete at this high level that you're so, quote-unquote, attached to, you know, that's a part of your identity. So you need to... And it helped me, I mean, I had to do this after the fact, actually, is recognize how important is this to me? Meaning, is this really who I am, and can I do without this if I can't recover from this injury? And you got to go through that mental process of detaching yourself from the sport, if you will, and what will my life look like if I can no longer run at the level that you want to compete at. And it gives you a whole insight as to, you know, a different insight anyway, as to how life might be. And you have to kind of get your head around that and maybe even accept it. And it was at that point that I accepted that my injury was shoulder injury and I wasn't able to play racquetball anymore, and you kind of walked me through that, or at least to the level I wanted to play. So I went through that process of, can I live without playing racquetball at the level that I want to compete at? And if so, what does that look like? And to just go through that whole process, and it was actually letting go. I finally got to the point where, okay, I'm just not going to do that anymore. I'm going to find another athletic activity that I enjoy. And it was going through that searching process that actually helped the whole healing process. And I can't explain why, but it was just the fact of letting go that I could be, that this doesn't necessarily have to define who I am. I can be somebody else. But then it was, I think determination would have kicked in to where I do want this activity in my life. I could live with this other self-image, but I want this self-image. So it helped me become more determined and committed to, in fact, rehabilitate myself and get back to, you know, the level that I wanted to get back to, of which I did. It took almost 6 months probably, but I am competing again at actually probably a level higher since the conversation you and I had.
Wow.
I'm probably a very small, at least 100% of where I was, if not just a percent higher than where I was a year ago.
Wow.
So I think it's this whole self-image thing is recognizing that, you know, we are attached to that, and it is part of who we are, but can we live without it? And that just kind of drummed up the determination, the willpower to, okay, I really do want this in my life. And when you get your mindset and you get that commitment to accomplish whatever you want to accomplish, there's a lot of power there.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Greg. Yeah, well, congratulations on your shoulder that you're able to, your great success story, too.
Yeah, thank you.
You and I worked on your shoulder and with your racquetball. Racquetball or handball?
Racquetball.
Your racquetball and being able to get, sometimes, yeah, as you say, we get so attached to the process of, to our identity as an athlete and having to compete at a certain level. And, you know, with my running, like I said, geez, I was, you know, wanting to run, I was running at the top level. And then, you know, they say there's a fine line between competing at your best and not running at all. Because when you're at your, you know, there's that edge. When you're at the edge of doing your best, you're also at the edge of injury. And so one minute I'm doing my very best, running as fast as I have in years, and the next minute I'm not running at all. And so now, and so it's like kind of you have to lower your expectations for a while. I've done that. Of now, I'm not, you know, I my goal is to get back to running, but I'm not even thinking about that now. I'm just thinking about being able to walk with walk normally, and I'm sure that will come. But it's kind of like running is a little bit too far out there right now. So just like your shoulder, yeah, you have to. Oftentimes, when you let go of something, as you say, let go of the outcome, then it comes back to you. You're able to just do it. Like when I was got injured with after winning the San Francisco Marathon, and I had a stress fracture in my right leg, and then I just took up swimming and cycling since I couldn't run. And I just forgot about running for a while and just got good at those other sports. And then all of a sudden the triathlon came along and a whole other opportunity opened up for me. So that's great. And then I was able to start competing in the triathlon and got second in the Hawaii Ironman triathlon in 82. The timing worked out great. I was able to get back in. Oftentimes when we can't do something for a while, then when we get back into it, we come back with a fire and determination and excitement that we never had before. So that's another advantage of injury, is that being able to come back and have a renewed motivation. But another point, Greg, that you what you said brings up is the idea of kind of priorities. Looking at those, assessing your priorities as an athlete. And for me, I was doing the running and running at my top level and trying to then change my running, intensify it even more to get ready for this one-mile race. At the same time, I got into have you heard of Zumba dancing?
Oh, yeah.
Zumba dancing is it's like a Brazilian dancing that is really it's just a fun thing to do, and I love dancing, and so I was I know Amy, you work with dancers, ballet and all too, and so I got into that as well, just kind of as something fun to do, but it involves a lot of side to side motion, you know, which is totally different and puts stress on my bones in a different and ligaments in a different way, whereas running is a straightforward motion. So I think that contributed to the problem that when I go side to side, my those ligaments and everything's getting stressed. And I notice that now if I try to walk, if I go sideways or twist, that's what aggravates that. So that's something, Greg, as you were talking about, you have to look at your life and say, what do I really want? And in my case, I sort of reevaluated that what I really want to do is running is the most important thing. And Zumba dancing and other kinds of activities like that are a sort of a side, something extra, and that I'm willing to give up that enables in order to be able to run well. So that's a change that I'm making, that I'm not going to do that extra. If I'm doing cross training, it's swimming and biking works the best for me, as opposed to dancing that involves a side-to-side motion. So that's something you can help your athletes with, too, to evaluate what else are they doing in addition to the training that might be contributing to the problem. There may be many things. So, let's see. I know we have a new person, Amy Henry. Are you on the call? I don't know if she was able to join us. From North Dakota. Oh, okay. Well, if you're there, Amy, she was going to join us during half the call here, part of the call. I was going to have her introduce herself. She's someone new that just joined the course as well. So maybe next time we could do that. Is there anyone else that I left out that's on the call that wants to, would like to say something? Yeah, okay. This is great. Fantastic. That all of you guys contributed. Amy and David and Alex and Michelle and Greg. And I wanted to, thanks for all of your great suggestions and all of those. I have a checklist, sort of recovery plan checklist that I developed, and I want to, I'll share that with you in an email as well as on the website. And I also have wanted to answer your questions. Well, one of the things, a couple of things that I wanted to highlight with the, it's a very comprehensive injury recovery plan, but a couple of things I wanted to highlight that you can ask your athletes too is the mindset part, helping your athletes to ask the right questions instead of asking, what can't I do? Ask them, ask yourself, what can I do? We're always focusing on, I was thinking, God, I can't run. I can't even walk straight, right? Walk well right now. But what I can do, for instance, in my case, is I can swim and I can do floor exercises that don't involve standing on the foot, and I can do a little bit of biking. So those are things to ask. Have your athletes ask. You can ask other questions. Ask yourself, what's good about this situation? In this case, for me, what was good about the left foot being injured is that my right hamstring wasn't really completely healed. So while I'm resting here, both my right hamstring and my left foot can be healing at the same time, rather than going back too soon and with the right hamstring not being healed. So that's an example of asking what's good about this situation. You can always find something good about the situation. Like Brian with you. Brian, are you still there too? Oh, I think he may have had to go to work, but go back to his work. But he said that, with his situation with falling out of the stadium and in a coma and then coming back and having those injuries, that he had a daughter that was on the way and he was able to be perhaps a better father for his daughter, healing from injury and being able to shift his priorities. Another question you can have your athletes ask is, how can I use this to my advantage? So that forces you to really think about, there's always some way that you can use this situation to your advantage. And you can ask them to say, what can I learn from this? There's all kinds of learning that can happen from your injuries. How to be more patient, how to breathe, you can learn how to visualize, how to be, put things in priority and in perspective. Things you can also ask your athletes to ask themselves, how could I keep moving forward? Instead of looking backward and saying, why does this always happen to me? Why do I always get injured? Why is this just bad timing? Ask, how can I keep moving forward? Even if it's just a tiny step forward, or sometimes we take two steps back and one step forward, just keep that vision of moving forward with your progress toward health again. And ask yourself, what tools and resources do I need to heal? Because we can do it ourselves. We can do so much ourselves, and then often we need other outside, experts to heal. And so our athletes can use people like us, of course, sports psychology experts, performing edge coaches to heal the faster. And often it might be you know, sometimes if you're not getting success with one particular practitioner or a doctor, it might be you might need to change practitioners. In my case, I went to a chiropractor at this clinic in South Bay here, and there was one. I was working with a person that we weren't really connecting, and it's actually a college there, and so the supervisor hooked me up with another woman who's a runner, and so she's now treating me, and I think things are moving a lot faster since she can relate to me she's an Olympian and a runner herself, as well as a chiropractor. So sometimes hooking up with the right person is really important. And then asking yourself, what am I grateful for today? That's a great question to ask. If you come from a place of gratefulness, then healing is much more likely to occur. You're just able to, there's always something we can be grateful for. Even if you look outside your body, just grateful for the sunshine that day, grateful for having a warm place to live in, and being grateful for the rest of your body that is working well. Grateful that, you know, if it's an orthopedic problem, often with our athletes, just grateful that it's an orthopedic problem, not an internal, you know, problem like cancer that could be much more serious. So often you can look at it that way, that orthopedic problems are easier to heal in many ways. So those are some mindset questions you can have your athletes ask. And then being able to switch gears, you know, it's just laser focus on taking care of the injured area. And you want to protect the other body parts to prevent those compensation injuries. Like my right hamstring hurt first, and then the left foot came on. And so my right hamstring was having to compensate for the left foot. And so it was getting aggravated again. So it's really important to, you know, try to do whatever you can to keep your body, the part on the opposite side, to keep it healthy so it doesn't get further injured. You know, standing up, icing, doing the foam roller, the stick, you know, which is this great tool that you can just massage out different areas. Those are all great things. And then just to, you know, ease into movement gently and slowly. And oftentimes your body, as you probably know as athletes, you know, might feel great that day if you're doing something new. But the next day, it's not till the day after or 2 days later that you get the feedback that, oh, that was too much. So it's good to always be conservative and only do a small bit, and then let your body give you the feedback the next day and 2 days later if that was okay before progressing forward. And then, you know, just doing, you know, sometimes athletes, like when I was had my hip surgery, I couldn't hardly do anything. I was just on the floor, and so I couldn't do a regular aerobic workout at all for the first 3 or 4 weeks. So I just did mini exercise sessions, and that can really help with mood. You know, I would do like 5 minutes or 10 minutes on the floor of just, stomach crunches or something really small for, just upper body training, and something that you can do that helps you just keep limber, and it can help your sense of that you're moving forward as well. So, just viewing everything as a challenge. It's a challenge just like a race or just like a game. You know, when you're an athlete, you're oftentimes in a competitive mode, and you think about, I'm shooting for this particular competition that's coming up. Well, with an injury, if you can make it a game as well and say, okay, let's see how good can I be at rest? How good can I be at stretching? Or how good can I be at alternative exercise, you know, have that same mindset as a competitive athlete. You can use that same mindset as a healing athlete to get yourself better quickly. So, and then just another thing I wanted to mention is building your knowledge base, for your injury recovery. It's good to do your education, your research, you know, try to become an expert in your own particular injury or surgery healing. So, you know, look up as much as you can on the internet, find the right experts, and you know, create a healing folder on your computer, you know, creating, like I've got a whole foot folder now of all different resources and exercises I can do. So you want to really be proactive, not just if oftentimes if you go to a regular doctor, MDs, they'll say, you know, oh, if it hurt, if you got a running injury, just don't run anymore. And they won't give you, or you're not going to be able to run anymore. They'll give you a real negative kind of prognosis. But if you can be proactive and try to, you know, find out as much as you can yourself and go to the people that can give you the most help, use your injury as a learning opportunity, and really create lots of resources, you know, you're going to be able to find a way. So help your athletes to do that. And, of course, Section 5 of my Your Performing Edge book is all about healing and injury, so that whole section can help you with lots of details. And then, you know, search YouTube. YouTube is a great resource for showing you different exercises you can do. I just typed in exercise while having foot injury. And so I got all kinds of exercises on there that you could do. What can you do for exercising when you can't, you know, when you can't walk or you can't be on your foot? And there's just you know, 10 or 20 videos there of different things you can do, you know, while you're sitting, while you're on the floor, while you're standing on the opposite foot, all other exercises you can do to keep the rest of your body in good shape and to still get, you know, a bit of a cardiovascular workout and muscular workout. So that can really help with keeping your mood up and keep from getting, you know, depressed about the injury and just focusing too much on the downside. It really can keep you positive. So, and then as I mentioned before, connecting with other athletes who've had a good experience with recovering from the same injury. One good resource I mentioned is the website TED.com. You probably are some of you are familiar with the TED Talk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're great. TED.com. You could search on there on there's a section on, well, different, like Diana Nyad has a great talk. There's just a great woman I just heard on there called Amy Purdy. If you search on her name, Amy Purdy, P-U-R-D-Y, a girl who was a pro snowboarder, and then she got meningitis and lost her legs. She was almost going to lose her hands and her nose and many body parts, but she lost her liver and her spleen. But it turns out she didn't lose her hands from the injury, and she ended up just focusing on being able to walk gracefully, and she found a way to be able to create snow. There was no prostheses that allowed people to do snowboarding, so she created them herself, and she just went and did, decided I'm going to work with a designer and a prosthesis expert, and she just persisted until she could find a way to get those to make prostheses to allow her to do her snowboarding, and so she got out there on the slopes, and she said things didn't always go as planned. At first she traumatized all the skiers on the slope as she went down the hill and she fell, and her legs were still attached to the snowboard, hurling down the hill, and she was still at the top of the hill. Her prostheses were still on the snowboard. Oh, and so that was really scary stuff. But she persisted and kept training and didn't let that stop her. The fact that she had lost her legs, this is below the knee, and she was able to continue training, and she became the first athlete ever to win back-to-back Olympic gold medals in the Paralympics in snowboarding, being a double amputee. Not just, most people are just one-leg amputees, and she's a double amputee. And so it's just a phenomenal story there. If you can, you can search on, you know, athletes' recovery stories on TED.com and have your athletes do that. And there's so many inspiring stories there that can really help athletes move forward. So I'll share with you this injury recovery checklist that I've developed here. More of that, we could talk about it more next time too. And then also, I know that a couple of you had questions. Do anybody else have comments? Wanted to comment on any of this? Excuse me. Okay, I had a note. Is Michelle still there? I don't know if Michelle is still on the line. Maybe she had to go. Is Alex still on the line?
I'm here, yes.
Okay, hi, Alex. Yeah, so you had a question about, I know Michelle had one too, and oh.
I'm here too.
Oh, good, great.
Sorry, okay. I was muted. I just had to turn it off.
Oh, okay. No problem. Yeah, maybe you can, let's see. You said, well, let's see, I think, Michelle, you sent me yours first. So you had a you had a question about a golfer? Oh, I guess you muted her. Call again. You said that a golfer phone. I'll read it here. A golfer phoned you and said, "Would like to discuss a problem he's currently experiencing. He has a 7 handicap, but this number is currently going up, and now he sits at around 11 handicap. He has a very good short game, but his long game has deteriorated quite substantially in the last 12 months. He can no longer compete, and he's quite embarrassed about his drives. When does he, when he does practice swinging or practices with a wiffle ball, there's no problem. But once he puts a golf ball down, he loses his swing entirely. His swing is about a quarter of what it should be. And she said, consequently, he loses direction and distance. And he's not injured and is capable of full swing during practice, but not when he stands over the real ball. And he is self-taught and spends a lot of time studying and watching the game. She asked, do you have any insights? And so, Michelle, that's a great question, since that's the one of the main issues that most athletes come to us as, is that I can do it in practice, but I can't do it in the real game. Situation or the real competitive situation. And are you still there, Michelle?
I'm here.
Oh, great. So is that your question?
I'm back. Technical difficulties. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. So is that your question about the
yes.
golfer?
That's my question.
Yeah, so what to do in the situation. And I think there's kind of like it seems like he has two mindsets. You know, one of the practice situation, and then one when he's on the golf course, yeah, with the real ball, he gets into a different situation of anxiety or panic kind of thing.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
And apparently he looks actually quite ridiculous with this swing, and he can't seem to stop it from happening.
Yeah. So one thing that he could do is to, I think, bring, you know, find out what he's doing with his mind, how he's thinking when he's just practicing with the wiffle ball, and try to get in touch with more of that mindset. And you could ask him too, you know, what is he thinking, what's he feeling when he's practicing, how does he swing, how does he feel? Try to get into all 5 senses of what he's experiencing with the practice, with the wiffle ball. And then try to, if he can, go out to the golf course, maybe try to gradually work out to the golf course when he's not in a game, maybe just practice on the golf course himself with a golf ball with no one else watching. That might be a good way to just kind of ease into it. And before he swings, if you can have him try to imagine being in practice and just saying to himself, this is practice, this is, and have that, bring that practice mindset into the golf game. So that he is, relaxed. And if he goes back into anxiety again, just have him step away from the swing and just be able to relax, take a few deep breaths, and then just and maybe watch some videos, too, of himself or other top athletes when they're very relaxed, and try to see that visual of being relaxed when he's out on the golf course. But, and it's a process. It doesn't happen all at once. But if there's a way, if he can say to himself, this is practice, you know, because basically even if he's in a game, every game is practice for the next game, right? So, yes, if he can say, this is, you know, I'm in practice, and all the good things about, you know, and ask him to write down what are all the good things about practice sessions and how does he feel and, you know, relaxed and breathing and swinging well and hitting the ball well, all those things, just try to make a transition as slowly and smoothly from practice into the game or onto the golf course. That can help him to I've done that with baseball, you know, this baseball kid that was really concerned about it. If he just kept saying to himself, this is practice, this is fun, this is easy, I'm relaxed, and bring that practice mindset out there onto the golf course, then after a while it just becomes like the golf course, you know, he has the same mindset, relaxed mindset, no matter where he is. That's the goal. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, that's fantastic. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Anyone else have suggestions? I know, Alex, you work with golfers or anyone.
Yeah, one thing I would do is when he practices, I mean, I don't know whether he already does it, but check with him if while he practices, he's putting pressure on himself. But one thing is to practice just for the purpose of practicing, but we are not really practicing the mental part of performing while practicing. So I would encourage him to go to the driving range and say, okay, I'm gonna play in my mind to hit, let's say, 3 straight drivers. So kind of pushing himself to perform rather than just go and hit golf balls.
Mm-hmm.
So he needs to have some self-induced pressure to perform even at the driving range.
Right.
Otherwise, it's two very different experiences.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point.
Mm-hmm. So sometimes what I do is I play in my mind the golf course that I'm going to play next. So I already know, okay, the first hole is a par 4, is a trees on the right, and out of bounds on the left. So, okay, so I imagine myself hitting that drive. Boom, I hit it. And then I play the next hole. If I mishit it, then I have to go back to the first tee and hit it again.
Right.
Right. So I may play, yeah, play the first driver well. So I go to the second hole, and second hole I hooked it left. All right. So I go back to the first tee, not to the second one, the first one, and start all over again. So you're putting yourself pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So then the idea is then whatever techniques you apply with him to have visualization, some breathing, some. Prior to have a routine, things that will help him prior to executing the golf shot, whatever you're practicing with him.
Mm-hmm.
So then he can take with him that specific technique onto the real golf course, so he's ready, better prepared on what to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks, Alex.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's great.
I was also thinking that he should visualize a full golf swing so that when he is approaching the ball, he you know, replays this through his mind as he's approaching the ball.
Yeah, visualize the golf course. Yeah, exactly.
No, like a full swing, a full back swing. So if
he
can get a really clear picture of himself doing it, and then it, you know, takes 2 seconds or a second before he hits that ball, he's already played that action in his mind.
Yeah. I think that's a really good idea, yeah.
That helps me with my tennis serve.
What's that?
One other thing, and it actually...
Greg?
Yes, this is Greg, sorry. The young man that just won the British Open, this last weekend, Rory McIlroy, he was struggling. I mean, he's projected to be one of the better golfers of of his time, anyway, his generation, he was struggling on the second round. In a PGA tournament, you play four rounds starting on Thursday. He'd always come out Thursday, do really well. Friday, he would not do so well. But he was really struggling with that. And so what he did was, much as we just described, he worked with a sports psychologist, created the visual image of having a great second round, but he anchored that with cue words. He didn't say what words he used, but before every shot, he used these few cue words and cue phrases that supported his visualization so that he didn't have to revisualize his visualization every shot, but he could use this anchor word or a cue word, and it would put him in that state of mind instantly. So cue words or key phrases are real important when you're playing in a sport like that, to where it's not continuous motion, to where you have time to go through a routine and reset that mindset that you're looking for in a quick one word or quick phrase. And obviously it helped him, and he even mentioned it in an article in USA Today that was what helped him win the British Open, was simply using cue words.
Well, the key word was process.
Was that his word?
Yeah, there were two. Process was one of them, while he was hitting off from the tee box or the fairway. And then when he got to the green, he would say spot. I mean, he would just aim at the spot that he wanted the ball to run by. So the two things, so it's process and spot.
Spot, oh, okay.
Yeah, spot.
Yeah, process was the first one. Yeah, he could sell those, boy.
Since
it's so valuable. Yeah, but it could be, yeah, it's great that that's a great concept, and thanks for sharing that, Craig. Yeah, because in golf it can be so up and down, that's for sure. It can be up one in one section and down in the next, and you have to reset your thinking. And sometimes, with athletes, I've used the word reset. You know, it's like you have a reset button, like on the computer and stuff. If it's not working, you just hit the reset button, and it just brings everything back to square one, and with a fresh computer, fresh reboot, and you've got a fresh mindset again, so that you are able to erase all the recent mistakes there in your mind. And that's one thing that golfers and many athletes do is once they made a mistake, then they replay that mistake over and over in their minds, and their body follows those mental instructions. And so if you have a way of resetting that, or kind of wiping out the mistake and saying, okay, new round, new mindset, or new hole, new mindset, so that you're starting over like a tabula rasa, kind of blank slate on your mind, and a fresh outlook on it, almost like a kid, you know, that doesn't, you're just kind of moving along with wonder, you know, with that sense of excitement. So, great. Yeah, that's really good. Does that help with your question, Michelle?
Hugely. Thank you, everyone. And the McIlroy story is really good because it gives credibility to all of this, which I think this guy would like to hear. So,
yeah, so you could have him just search on that, you know, and you could search on it, McIlroy and sports psychology keywords, and you can find more information about that, too. So, yeah, good. I know you had a second question, Michelle. Let's go to Alex's question first. He had one about rowing. Do you have?
I'll be addressing about 20 young rowers, age of 14, 17. They're fairly competitive, and they invited me to give a talk to them. And I'm not very familiar with rowing myself, so I wanted to know if anyone has any pointers or things that should be
if you can find out what let's see, what...
what strategies, what their specific need in rowing, and things I should be paying attention to the most. It's a very unique sport. So anyway,
yeah,
that's what it's about.
So you're going to be speaking to a... Is it a high school group, or I mean, to the school or a club?
It's a club, yes.
Okay, yeah, that's great. Club, can you want to share with others how you got the opportunity to speak there?
They found me.
Great, through the internet.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
Oh, good.
So now the idea is to talk with them by end of August, maybe. And I say, sure, more than happy to. I just want to know what I'm going to say.
When is your talk?
I'm sorry?
When is your talk?
In a month.
Okay.
I have a month to prepare.
Okay, so...
But I'm going to be away for 2 weeks. So I wanted to know if anybody has already worked with rowers or endurance, sports... and just things that I should be mostly concerned about or paying most attention to, maybe prior or during the performance, that I can share with these young athletes.
Yeah, I think if you can find out from them first before the talk what their specific issues are, if you can first talk with, one strategy first is just to, like, before giving any talk in general, is to do a pre-program questionnaire. Looking at asking them, what are your main challenges coming up? What are the main issues that you're problems that you're dealing with? And ask them. You could do like a little interview with the person that asked you to speak, or the coach there. Ask them what they'd like to learn from you, what they're looking to do, what specific races they have coming up. If you can, even if you don't know the sport, if you can learn a little bit about the language of what they're doing, what kind of boats they're in, because there's all kinds of different boats that they could, be competing with. I used to do actual kayaking myself many years ago, and which is referred to more as paddling, but still in the water, and I know that... we used to do flat water paddling on kayaks, which is similar to rowing. And so, of course, there's the individual rowing as an individual sport, and then there's if they're just doing it individually, and then there's team. So you can ask them if they'll be competing as an individual boats or if it's two man or four man. If it's women, guys and girls.
Yeah, both. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So.
So your idea is to reach out to the coach first to get an idea of what their needs are.
Yeah, I'd say that. Yeah, and find out what their problems are, so that a good strategy if you don't know the sport too well is just to ask a lot of questions. of them first to kind of get the to find out what their main issues are, what they're struggling with, and then if you can work with those, you could use the basic strategy of the three P's and that you're performing edge, the positive images, visualization and power words, what they say to themselves, and then present focus, how to relax and execute. That would be great. In rowing, of course, you've got most of the time it's a very short, kinds of sprints and very, there's a lot of power and all-out effort. So if you can, they need to be thinking about how to perform under pressure, how to have everybody... in sync, if it's a group, rowing together, mastering pain and fatigue is a critical skill to achieve success as a rower, because there's a lot of, you know, intense work that has to be done over a short period of time. So it means that as a rower, you know, they need to know two things, sort of how to control your focus when you begin to hurt, you know, be able to just focus on the on your technique, and then second, how to, you know, keep the negative thinking and self-doubts out that almost always go along with pain. Because we're talking about good pain here, if it's not an injury, but just the pain of effort, you know. You know, if they have, you know, that can, a lot of that can come from confidence. And so if they can improve, you know, just kind of what I like to say, get comfortable with being uncomfortable. Yeah, because they're going to be uncomfortable because it's such an intense sport. It's not like a marathon where you can just kind of warm up. You've got a really short period of time. And so I think, you know, probably most of them are just working on the physical part of training. And so kind of asking them, is mental training an active part of your preparation or simply just kind of an afterthought? Just talk about how they can harness the power of the mind to lift the level of their performance during this, you know, the short period of time that they have to recover. Visualizing the different possible scenarios, being, because they could be behind, you know, a competitor right there. They can usually, the advantage of rowing and disadvantage is that you can see what's going on the whole time. Usually you can see the other boats, you can see exactly how far you are behind or ahead, whereas in something like swimming, oftentimes you're underwater, you can't see your other competition. So being able to see exactly where you're at, you know, how much you have to work. So if they can visualize the different scenarios, being behind their competition and then being ahead and coming back, you know, getting a second wind, and then they could visualize being ahead perhaps is another scenario, and then having another boat just right on their butt, coming up on them so that they have to stay ahead. Those are different scenarios that they could think about, ask them about their motivation as a rower. Do they have that inner drive to do what's necessary to achieve success? Sometimes there's, you know, brutal, monotonous grind of daily training out there, and there a lot of times they can get, you know, sort of lose their motivations, because there's so much training that has to go on. And so ask them sort of the reason why, you know, if it helps to have some sort of a compelling goal or a reason why they're doing this. If they have a purpose, a sense of purpose, that can help them to get through the monotonous training. You know, ask themselves, how is what I'm doing now going to help me to get to my goal? Because, you know, a lot of times rowers have, they have difficulty kind of seeing their training, but they don't have a good motivation for it. So if they can kind of get a reason why they're doing this, that's really important. And I think, you know, your success in a boat, just like success on the golf course, you know, that we were talking about before, it's like you want to be moving toward your physical and emotional limits, because you're really going all out. These things are real sprints that they're doing out there usually.
Yeah.
And so when you're tired and your body's screaming for, you know, to stop, you know, you have to stay with that discomfort a little bit more. And so, sometimes it could be cold or raining or windy, and so sometimes the boat can be kind of tippy because of the water conditions. So you have to learn to embrace the conditions, whatever they are. and being able to train, you know, train smarter rather than harder. So sometimes you, you know, and then also the, you know, because the rowers can see the other boats and know, sometimes they're intimidated by their competition. And so it's good to be able to, rather than being intimidated, to help them to realize that that other boat can be their ticket to getting to doing a personal best, to getting to their next level, being able to use the other boat being ahead as you know, motivation. You know, using that magnet technique that we've talked about. Imagine putting a magnet on the other boat and having, rather than working so hard to catch up, imagine the other boat is drawing you toward that effortlessly, and you feel their energy moving you along. So imagine the other boat is doing the work rather than you. And sometimes that can be really helpful. So just pushing the envelope kind of thing. Is that helpful, some of that?
Yeah, very nice. I appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And then just, because it's, I mean, it's not like a sport like the marathon where you can be out there by yourself all the time with these boats. They're right next to each other.
Yeah.
So you have to have developed the ability to handle that competitive pressure. Often there's like a pre-race nervousness there. It can sabotage all your work ahead. And so if you can, you can help them to kind of control their nerves, you know, with breathing, deep breathing processes, and the power words saying that, you know, we can do this, we're a good team, you know, staying cool in the moment, being able to, and then respond quickly when you hear the, you know, having everybody on board, being able to respond to the sound of the start gun is really important. To not anticipate it, you don't want to get the false start. It's just like in, like sprinters on a track, you want to be able to move out quickly and respond just at that right moment when you hear the starting gun. So that's working on the start is really important, to be calm but anticipate the you know, the start gun, but be able to, and find out what it is. Sometimes, depending on what the situation is, it might be a beep, it might be a gun, it might be just seeing a light, how they start the races. It can be different for different races. So
okay.
Being able to be able to be good at being nervous, you know, kind of thing,
yeah.
And kind of practicing that nervousness if they can. So, yeah, those are some ideas. And just, as I mentioned, mastering the pain and fatigue, I think that's a big part of rowing. That's a difficult one, how to control your focus. You know, when you hurt, and
is
then concentration,
fatigue versus what,
I guess,
pain?
Is another skill to work on to achieve success as a rower. Just being able to block everything else out and just be able to handle the pressure. A lot of times, you know, athletes can, you know, the term choking. They might think about, you know, sometimes they, because it's obvious who's winning and who's losing out there, it's easy to worry about choking and not and being psyched out by the other team. So if they can think about just, you know, their preparation and being able to excel in the mental area, then they're going to be able to, even if they're not as physically strong as the other team, they can oftentimes, you know, beat the other team if they've got, you're just really emphasizing the value of the mental skills. I think. So, yeah, so those are some things to think about, I think.
Great,
that
thank
might
you,
help. And then you could help them with the ability, you know, and this applies to rowing and any sport, how to deal with adversity and setbacks and failures. Ask them about that if they've had those, you know, not been beat, or they've been beaten by another rival team or that kind of thing. And so ask them how can they build on, you tell stories of how other winners, you know, build on their successes, build success based on failures, and that the failures are really a way to learn from your mistakes. Just like we talked about last time with the Brazilian team, that poor Brazilian team, And then, of course, you're from Argentina, right, Alex?
Yes, I am.
The German team winning the World Cup,
mm-hmm.
Being able to say, okay, we lost this time, but you know we can how can we rebound and make ourselves even, usually from mistakes we learn to be even stronger for the next time around.
That's right.
Bounce back even better for the next time. So
thanks so much. Very useful. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I hope that helps, and let us know how it goes and all. That would be great. I know we're kind of running, we're getting way over time here. Michelle, are you still there?
Hi, Dr. Joanne.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so we had, let's just do that one last question that you had. You said you'd be back in Vancouver.
I'm just, like, I have a lot of sports connections in Vancouver, and I'm just wondering, what do you think the best way is to approach them, to just letting them know what I'm doing, rather than, you know, I know I'll probably default to just an email or giving them a quick call, but is there any sort of thing that you can recommend that's a bit, can get me in the door?
Yeah, I'd say if you can, offer them information, a sample of what you do rather than just marketing, that's always really good. Like send them an article or some tips. They're always, teams or organizations are always looking for content and for actual tips. So that they can get some actionable information that they can use right away, then they'll be more likely to say, "Wow, this lady's really good. We know how to work with her." And this is great, ideas for all of you that are wanting to market and get out there with your with different sports organizations. I'd say if you can. I always pair an email with a phone call because sometimes the first email can get lost in spam if they don't know who you are. I'll write the email and then just the moment I hit the send button, then I'll call them and leave a message and say, "Oh, I just sent you an email." It'll be from, you can say Michelle, and the subject line says blah blah blah, says this, so that you can alert them that the email is coming. That way they'll get it much less likely that they'll delete it, that they know. And that way you hit all the senses at once, the reading, the visual sense, and also they hear your voice on a voice message or talk to them in person, even better if they're there. And then if you're talking to them in person, say the email, "I just sent it to you," and often they can just open it right there. And then they're hearing you, discussing it with you, and seeing the email all at once. It's much more likely that they'll really take notice. And if you can have a link in the email or a couple links to what you do, to your website or to any videos that you have, videos are the best, to make a connection there. You can just put them easily up on YouTube and for free. And, where you're talking about, you can just do a quick one using that Google Hangouts or just video yourself with your iPhone kind of thing and put that up on YouTube, just talking about, maybe give two or three tips rather than just doing marketing. Say, okay, pick a topic, whatever it is, maybe what sports would you want to work with?
Probably field hockey and mountain biking.
Okay. So let's say with mountain biking, just talk about your own experience with mountain biking and maybe three main problems. Threes are usually work really well with information or with articles or videos. So three main mental mistakes, you could call it, or anything like that, mistakes that that mountain bikers make. And then what to do instead. So you say mistake number one is this, losing focus going up the hill. And then here's what to do about that. And then here's mistake number two, and here's what to do instead. Mistake number three, here's what to do instead. And that really establishes you as the expert and gives them really useful information. And then say, I'd be available for a... to do a talk for your organization And you know, let's see. And most sports organizations love giving, love someone to give a talk there. And sometimes you could offer to do it for a small payment if they have that available, or for free. And then at the talk, you can give your, you know, get, have a special for your special for clients. Say a three sessions for a certain amount, that kind of thing, or an introductory, you know, free session for the first three people or something like that, so you're not overwhelmed with free ones. But so that's a good way to start, to just give them free information and a free sample of what you do. And in your talk, you can actually, you know, sometimes it can work really well to have someone come up, a volunteer, and actually coach them for a few minutes with something that they're dealing with. You could prepare that ahead of time, ask someone to come up, and if they've got, you know, something they can think about that's an issue, that way you set it up a little bit, or do it by just extemporaneously, and give an example of your coaching, and people oftentimes identify with that, and they say, wow, she's that good coaching that person. You know, they can they put themselves in that position too, so they realize you could coach me. And then you can also record it. A good way, if you're going to give your talk, you know, do it ahead of time, record it, just talk into your iPhone, or use Audacity, or that program I've got in our course, and just record it, and then you could sell the CDs or the recording at the back of the room if you want, or make that available to people as an MP3. Either free or paid, so that's good, so they can listen to it afterward, and always have your website, a link to not just your home page, but a particular page on your website that you describe, your coaching page, that gives all your information there, and then also a free, give away a freebie on your website. Say, I have a free, you know, tip sheet, a free, you know, top 10 tips, or top 10 questions, top 10, you know, problems, or five issues, and or cheat sheet kind of thing for athletes, and something like that. People love those kind of things, little sheets that you could have on your website. And then if you're giving a talk, you could have it as a handout. Always have some kind of a handout there with your contact information. And just try to come up with real problems that they have. If you're a mountain biker, Michelle, too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you do that so you can know what the main issues are and come up with those, you know, falling off your bike and getting back up again, or fears that mountain bikers have. Top 10 fears is good, too. So have those as, you know, information. Or you can, a good way to do it too is to drip information to them, not give them everything at once, but just give them a little bit of something, you know, three tips, you know, on the first phone call that you're going to do with the coaches or something, and then say, I have three more tips on this other subject, three tips on fears, three tips preparation for competition. And so if they don't respond to the first three tips kind of thing, then you can give them three more, you know, and say a phone call later. So those are some ideas to get you started. Is that helpful?
Very helpful. I'm so glad I asked you. Thank you.
Yeah, good. And I've got lots of other things too. Ideas. Maybe we can include that. We can go into that in more depth on the next call too. Yeah.
Just to get me started. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks. Sure. Yeah. Just arranging to give a talk is a really good way. Or another thing you can do is if there's a particular athlete that is more is in most need of help. You could offer to, you know, in the sports organization, I say, is there somebody that needs a lot of help in this area? Usually, there's one athlete that's you know, having difficulty and need some mental coaching, you could offer to work with that one athlete for free for a couple sessions and have them, you know, get you in touch with that athlete. And then so you can work with them and they really show some results, get a testimonial, and then the whole organization will want to work with you. Kind of thing, and say, wow, she can make this kind of result with this one athlete, think what she could do with our star athletes, kind of thing. So that's always a good way to work with an individual first. It's a good way to get into a whole group, kind of thing. So get in the door, because people love to get a way to experience what you do, not just talk about it, but experience it. So, and sometimes the coach themselves might need help. They might need consulting. So you can consult with the coach. They've got, difficulty with some athletes. So you can give them some tips right there, give them a sample of what you do, and then offer to meet with them in person. Yeah. So, okay. Hopefully that's helpful.
Fantastic. Thanks, Dr. Joanne.
Yeah, thanks. Okay, I know we're way over time here, but yeah, anyone else have other questions?
No, that's it. So thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. It's a, I don't know if some people probably left since it's time, but if you want to just, maybe we can just go around the people that are left and say what was most helpful, if you have a, so that we can kind of summarize for others, what's one nugget that you might take away from this call today that was helpful for you so others can remember it too?
It's Michelle, and one thing that I particularly liked was with your mindset questions when somebody's recovering from an injury and they can ask themselves how they can use this best to their advantage. I love the way you turned a negative into a positive.
Oh yeah, that's good. Okay, thanks. Yeah. Yeah, Alex, did you have something?
Yeah, I think I like the visualization and to help through the injury. I think it's very powerful. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, the visualization with injuries?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and there's all kinds of things we can do with that, too. Knitting, like with my foot, you know, just imagining, or anyone's that has bone, ligaments and tendons, imagine them knitting together just right. So that they have, imagine that flexibility. Like when you want flexibility, maybe imagine them as a rubber band. So you've got the flexibility of a rubber band, but also the strength. Imagine them being strong, something that's strong, like a bone. So they've got both strength and flexibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the functioning, like you said, Alex, imagining the proper functioning of the bones, the ligaments, the fascia, everything working together as a team. So great. Anyone else, other people on the call that want to think for a nugget?
This is Dave. I like, with the visualization also, when the example I believe Alex brought up about, or the response Alex had about the golfer and practicing under pressure, because kind of working to simulate things. So that was a good good thing for me to remember.
Yeah, good. Yeah,
so thanks.
Try to simulate the competitive situation. Practicing under pressure, that's great. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, anyone else on the call that has something that you learned? I think it's because we've gone so long, probably people are having to leave.
Mm-hmm. Well, I sure appreciate
Brian?
The call.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay, thanks so much. Yeah.
Okay.
And our next
thanks,
call.
Thanks, Dr. Joanne.
Oh, yeah, thanks. Okay, thanks. And our next call will be on, let's see, the Thursday. It's the second and fourth Thursdays of the month, so August the 14th.
Great.
Okay.
We'll talk to you then. You can mark your calendars, and we'll talk to everyone then. And in the meantime, I'll send you this injury checklist and other tools here. So,
thank
all right,
you very
great.
Much.
Well, have a good day, everyone.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Bye.
Bye-bye.